Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. So I hope people can hear me online. I don't know. Okay. Thank you. So,
yes.
Oh, okay. So I'm from the university, so I'm not used to this fancy setup, actually. Today I'm going to talk about this stellar neutrino and then and especially MEB stellar neutrino in the context of the Khabibov anomaly. This is probably something you're not so much familiar with, so I'm going to talk about it. And so I had a severe headache yesterday because maybe I traveled from like a very warm weather to good weather in Canada, which is still cold for me. So I feel like I was very scared by looking at the forecast, but okay. So by now I'm so far used to it, but yeah. Okay, so please interrupt me anytime. So basically just broad introduction. So I want to just say one or two slides about a brief motivation about feebly interacting light particles as opposed to the heavy new physics. So we have so far like many frameworks of light particles, for example, Higgs boson scalar, axion or axion-like particle, heavy neutrinos or stellar neutrinos, leptonic force, and each of them can be connected to one problem or multiple problems, and people actually try to use these light new particles to solve these like big questions, including anomalies. And so here is just more concrete connection, like axion is particularly connected to strong CP problem, or some people use axion-like particle to be a portal of dark matter, or muon G-2. This is something like Matthias works on, and other people also works on several light new particles, including like a leptonic force, which is this one. And this is something I'm going to talk about, neutrino mass and right-handed neutrino. Actually, I'm not going to talk about neutrino mass, but right-handed neutrino. In the Vanier scenario, they are typically heavy, but still light ones are viable. So they may resolve the anomalies. And just compared to the heavy new physics to a light new physics. So heavy new physics case, like in the context of the precision measurements, so people usually study the effective field theory or standard model effective field theory. So basically, you just use a known degrees of freedom and write down EFT operator and study the effect through the precision measurement and see if there is a deviation or not. But the big difference, if you have a light new particles, you cannot use this systematic approach because you have explicit light degree of freedom, right? So this systematic approach breaks down. So you have to actually check what is a new particle. So there is a strong model dependence on the nature of the new particle, right? So because you have to know what is a quantum number of this new particle, let's say X, what is the mass, what is the decay pattern, and what is the lifetime, so strongly model dependent. So that's something we have to actually admit for this new light particle physics. But at the same time, this is actually can be produced in the experiment. Maybe multiple experiments can produce because that as a mass-wise, we have enough energy to produce these particles. So we can maybe get a sign of this new particle from one experiment. We can check from the other experiment, for the different aspect. So it can be more falsifiable framework. And among many such possibility, today I'm just focusing on stellar neutrino. I used to work on more like a heavy axion, but today I just focus on the stellar neutrino. So I'm going to talk about stellar neutrino. And particularly, I'm going to connect this one to a specific anomaly called the Khabibov anomaly. So this is the second point I'm going to talk about, and I'm going to combine two of them. OK, so this is something like you may be familiar with, but let me just start from very brief introduction. So the stellar neutrino, the most Vanier scenario is just add right-handed neutrino, which is like basically standard model singlet fermions. And if you have these singlet fermions, you can extend the standard model in the renormalizable level by having a Yukawa interaction and Majorana mass term, right? So this is a very well-known framework. And what this framework can do is, especially if the MN, this mass term is very heavy, you can do like a seesaw mechanism to explain the neutrino mass. Especially in this case, you need two or more right-handed neutrinos to do it. or you can do the leptogenesis to create a baryon asymmetry. In the case of leptogenesis, you can do like a, both cases, you can do like a, actually not only the heavy one, but in the vanilla scenario, it's easier to do it by heavy steroid, heavy right-handed neutrino mass. And there are more motivations. For example, if it can be like a light, not necessary to be heavy. Heavy means like a God scale or something like this. So it can be light. Then you can actually have a, like a steroid neutrino as an active light degree of freedom, which can be maybe produced in the experiment. So the third point is that some anomalies can be resolved by this new particle steroid neutrinos, or it can be a portal to a dark sector. So I'm going to talk about, among 4 points, I'm going to mostly talk about the third point, like a, how this steroid neutrino can be connected to anomaly. OK. And then just let me continue the basics thing. So just so because I was a bit sick yesterday, so I maybe screw up the notation. So I try to be careful if I change the notation right. But so this is still the same Lagrangian with a standard model. And then so alpha is the index of the flavor, so E and mu and tau. And then you have basically the after electric symmetry breaking, Higgs gets a VEV. So this looks like a nu, but it's actually a V. So and then you have a Dirac mass term between the right-handed neutrino and the our neutrino, usually. And then steroid neutrino Majorana mass term, Majorana mass term of the right-handed neutrino. And then you diagonalize. So what you get is basically some mixing happens, right? So this is the right-hand side is a mass eigenstate, and the left-hand side is actually this eigenstate. So this right-handed neutrino is basically split to the mass eigenstate nu 4, and then nu prime alpha, which is almost like an active neutrino in flavor index, so E, mu, or tau. So this is not the mass eigenstate, but we don't care about the mass difference between this like active neutrinos. So actually, I try to use that the flavor index, so nu alpha, which is like an electron type neutrino, which is not mass eigenstate. And then this standard model like neutrino, or standard model neutrino, is expanded to this flavor indexed the active neutrino and the steroid neutrino with mixing angle. So theta alpha is roughly the hierarchy of the Dirac mass and the neutrino right-handed neutrino mass. So this is basically, you get a small parameter if you have a hierarchy between the neutrino Dirac mass and the right-handed neutrino mass. Okay.
So here you have only one steroid neutrino.
Yeah, for my purpose, actually, I only need one steroid neutrino. Yeah.
Right. But to give all
so to do satisfactory the seesaw mechanism to make the order neutrino massive, I need to have at least two.
Yeah.
But if I try to combine my scenario with this neutrino setup, I probably need three or more because I need to actually fine tune a little bit of that to explain active neutrino mass.
So are you assuming the others are heavier, much heavier?
It can be heavier than MEB. Yes. So I may need a hierarchy between the like a, in this. So in the reality, there is an index of this, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say capital N I, and then there is also M N I. So it can be the same, but it can be different. So this is actually the most simplistic scenario
mm-hmm.
here. But this relation is only true for the first one neutrino one right-handed neutrino case. If you have a two or more, it can be more complicated. Basically, you can do almost whatever you can. So, yeah.
But I mean, for the rest of the talk, will it be important that it's one or basically?
For my purpose, it's not important. So,
for the anomaly you're going to discuss, if there are three, would it work or it would not work?
It's compatible with three. So, yes. Thank you for asking that. Yes. So, yes. So, I have to make sure that, if you want to do the seesaw, it requires more than I have for to explain anomaly. I just need one, but at the same time, once I introduce one steroid neutrino, it automatically generates a mass term of the neutrino, right? So it can be heavier than what you need.
Mm-hmm.
So then, like to make sure that right spectrum, you need two or more right-handed neutrinos. Yes. And then for the steroid neutrino, important thing is the interaction. So how steroid neutrino couples to us. This is basically a weak interaction. So originally we have this weak interaction split to the just neutrino and the charged leptons. This charged neutrino is this guy. And this will be expanded to the mass eigenstate like this. So that the important thing is that active our neutrino has a reduced coupling because this coupling is split to two. So the active neutrino coupled to the weak current is suppressed by cosine theta. And then instead, stellar neutrino gets a coupling by suppressing with a suppression factor of the sine theta. So this is just simple linear algebra thing. So this is how actually stellar neutrino couples to us mainly, unless we introduce other interactions.
Sorry. But the right-handed singular neutrino can only interact with gravity.
Yes, can interact with it.
So matter.
It coupled to matter here.
The right-handed singular neutrino.
This is a right-handed singular neutrino.
Gravity.
But this couples to us, right? Sorry, right-handed singular neutrino is this capital N, right? We can write down this. This is a matter.
The right-handed singular neutrino, the sterile, is called sterile. It's not coupled to matter.
Okay, maybe this is a terminology issue. So okay, maybe I'm calling a stellar neutrino not the historical sense, maybe. Okay.
This is accepted, okay.
Okay, so
couples to gravity.
So my stellar neutrino is just okay, let me take this is a you can call whatever, but nu4 is the coupling to the weak current with this amount. But this framework is clear, right? Is it clear? Because I have this interaction with a singlet fermion, and they expand and diagonalize it. That's it.
Right-handed singlet has no quantum numbers.
Yeah, that's why you can write down this, right?
So,
I think it's okay. I mean, people do talk about these neutrinos as sterile. So the term, the meaning of the term has actually evolved. So let's carry on.
Okay. So the stellar neutrino, okay, maybe it's a different name, there is a different name, but this particular neutrino is widely studied. So one thing is that if the mass is less than 1 GeV, hadronic decay channel is closed, so it tends to be long-lived. So this is where you have a lot of bound from beam dump or cosmology. If it's heavier than 1 GeV, you are more like connected to these collider searches and so on and so forth. And then like there are many search, and I have like just one advertisement. Like there is many other searches are proposed. And one thing I recently work on, just a little bit out of the main point, but this is like can be tested by IOC beam dump if this new international linear collider can be done. The idea is very simple. If this linear collider happens, this is a linear collider, so E plus E minus high energy, high intensity collider. So they have to have a beam dump, unlike the circular collider. So because there is a beam dump, this is like a high energy electron beam dump experiment. So this is like a setup called an IOC beam dump. And the cool thing about this experiment, if this happens, is that it's a higher energy electron than any other previous electron beam dump. It's like a 125 or 500 GeV electron hitting water, and then center of mass energy can be easily more than like heavy mesons, like B mesons and so on, which is never true in the current or past beam dump experiment. So you can produce a lot of heavy mesons like this. So you can actually look for the rare decay of this to look for the long-lived particles. So this is something I did. And this spectrum is actually one of my colleagues seriously studied by the detector simulation and so on. So this can be used for other long-lived particles. But anyway, the projection we did is similar to, the sensitivity is similar to another proposed experiment like SHIP. This is a dedicated beam dump experiment, unlike IOC. This is a proton beam, and then sensitivities can be similar to the SHIP experiment. SHIP is actually this magenta dashed line. And then our work is black or red ones. So anyway, there are many other proposals going on for searching to search for the stellar neutrinos. Okay, so let me come back to Kabibo angle. Okay, so what is this? So what is the anomaly to begin with, right? So in the standard model, it's an obvious thing, but gauge and Yukawa couplings are not aligned. So still, we can align or diagonalize neutral current and masses simultaneously. So that's fine. There is no the flavor changing current in the Z or photon coupling. Then, but charge current is not diagonal, right? So that's why we have the CKM matrix. So because we cannot diagonalize weak current, we have like a flavor index here, so ij and so on and so forth. So this is particularly for the quark. And then there is a CKM Kobayashi Maskawa and Kabibo matrix is there. So that this is a unitary matrix, and the index is often labeled like this. So you have VUD, VUS, VUB, BCD, and so on and so forth. So you have this the unitary matrix because we cannot diagonalize weak current simultaneously. So we know what we know them very well, but not completely. But we know that what the VCKM should be. So in the standard model, the VCKM should be unitary, right? Because this is a kind of like a combination of the different unitary matrix. So this should be unitary matrix. So if you look at the VV dagger, should be equal to 1. This is like a 3x3 matrix. So if you look at the 1-1 component, which is UU, should be 1. And if you look at the off-diagonal component, this should be equal to 0. So this is just a consequence of the unitarity. So if I particularly, like people often test the unitarity, like in the PDG, you see the unitarity test of the CKM. You often see the test of the off-diagonal element, which is this one. So right-hand side is equal to 0. And then you have like three combinations, and you can write down the triangle. But here I focus on this one, VUU, which is equal to 1. So what's inside? So this matrix is basically VUD squared, so basically the mixing charge current couples the U and D, or U and S, or U and B, and square each. Okay? So this is a VV dagger UU component. And although there are three components, actually one of them is not relevant for the test of this unitarity relation. So because we have three quantities, but the experimental uncertainty of the VUD or VUS is much larger than VUD itself. So you can actually drop this term, right? So this is just not because it's not irrelevant, but for given accuracy, it's not relevant. Okay, so for this current situation, we can drop this because it's one order magnitude smaller. So basically, the unitarity test for the given at this moment is basically VUD squared plus VUS squared should be equal to 1. So this is basically the consequence of the CKM. And this is nothing but the Kabibo angle, right? So this is a mixing between the U and D, D and S. So cosine theta C squared plus sine theta C squared, it should be equal to 1. So this is why it's called Kabibo angle. So there is an anomaly in this relation. Okay, so anomaly is following. So you measure this and this separately, and you can ask whether this is equal to 1 or not, up to the uncertainty, right? And then people parameterize this is plus delta CKM. And then experimental finding is this is less than 1, more than 2 significant standard deviation. So the result is actually this observed, VUD squared observed, the VUS squared observed, is smaller than 1 by, depends on the data set, but 2.8 or 3.8 sigma. And it's the important thing is smaller. So this is actually the situation. So initially, like people thought it's 4 sigma, but it's actually now between this number.
It doesn't?
Yeah.
It hasn't reached a significant 5 sigma.
No, not at all, yeah.
So therefore,
So that's why we don't call it discovery. This is the situation. So you measure this by one process, or you measure this by another process, and you can extract the number, and then you can test the value, right? This plus this is equal to one or not,
yeah.
And this is smaller than one.
So what are the processes? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to explain.
Ah.
Yeah, yeah, of course. But okay, I'm going to explain in the next slide as well, but it's a little bit brief. I'm going to explain more later, but I just want to show that the situation.
This slide, Remind me how big VUB is.
Ah, okay, so this is like a one order magnitude smaller, so maybe I'll have a number in the later, so...
Anyway, it's small enough that it can't fix...
The... Right, it's one order magnitude basically smaller, so you can actually omit for a moment. Of course, if the measurement of these two quantities are improved by one order magnitude, you have to include this. Of course, in the fit I include it, but it doesn't change anything, basically. So just to give you a flavor of the measurement, I will explain a little bit more later. So this is a plot of, it's better to be plotted to be square, because it's square is then it's a straight line. This is from my collaborator's paper. So you can actually measure three different things, like a VUD or VUS, or VUD over VUS, like a ratio. So VUD case, it's easier to measure by itself. So beta decay or neutron decay can measure this range. And then good measurement of the BUS only is this measurement. I think it's a kaon decay. So this is like a almost straight line. Okay, I cannot see if it's straight from here, but so it should be straight line, I hope. And then, yeah, okay. So there is it's very hard from here. But yeah, so some like a line with some slope is actually the measuring the ratio. So VUS over VUD can be measured. It's like take the two measurement and take a ratio. So that also gives you the constraint. And basically, the best fit is here, and the unitarity basically tells you anywhere here. So you're happy anywhere here, but the experimental situation is telling you, oh, okay, so this is not overlapping each other. So this is basically the situation. And then, okay, so in this spot, it's not including neutron decay. But neutron decay is itself subject of the tension, so there are two main input of the neutron decay, neutron lifetime measurement, which is a bottle measurement, a beam measurement. They give both of them, like actually these measurements itself are controversial, because like a bottle measurement is better, but it's way smaller than beam measurement. So depends on what data set you use for the neutron decay lifetime, the significance can be different. So if I use a bottle measurement, it's a 2.8 sigma. And if I use a beam measurement even stronger, it's 3.8 sigma. So this is what is a, yes?
So is it, just making it understand the plot, the blue circle, is that the one sigma thing? Is that the purple circle? Sorry?
This one?
Yeah.
So this is what I think, this is a chi-square 2.3, so it's at one sigma in two-dimensional fit, and this is this circle is inside the circle is a chi-square equal to one. It's a one sigma in one-dimensional sense.
So the problem isn't that you're over the entirety line. The problem is that the blue stripe doesn't agree with the other ones. Is that the
yeah? So this is a unitarity line. Yes. So for example, it's eventually like a one-dimensional fit. So you can actually let's say marginalize over one direction, and then you can see how much is actually closer to this line. So let's say I can take, for example, this slice, and then this case is a chi-square equal to one is here, and maybe two here, and then it's maybe not three is maybe above this line. So
is the basic tension that the blue stripe and the orange stripe are not overlapping each other? Is it because that's...
Oh, you're talking about this?
Yeah.
No, this is not the anomaly. So yeah, of course, this is one important input to determine what is the value in the VUS, right? So first, let's say I take a good measurement of the beta decay, so I fix the value of VUD. Then to test the unitarity, I need the other measurement to constrain somewhat this direction, right? So one good measurement is maybe it's not depends on the VUD, so you can actually measure this, so you can measure like this. And other good measurement is actually take a ratio of the pion decay and the kaon decay, and you get this sign and this sign. But okay, so your question is whether this is controversial or not. It's not controversial.
The success for the standard model would be that they would all overlap somewhere, right? That's the idea. And the fact that they don't overlap, is that
well, like it's more like the blue circle is on top of the black line.
Yeah,
no, but also blue and orange.
But basically, I think it's the neutron lifetime that's driving the anomaly mostly, right?
No, it's actually not. So neutron lifetime is on top of that. So even without neutron lifetime, there is anomaly.
How much? How big?
It's like a 2.8 sigma-ish. Because neutron lifetime and so beta decay is actually not only the neutron lifetime. It's more nuclear decay. So this is actually currently the best measurement to determine this one. And on top of that, so this measurement, OK, I'm already going to a little bit detail, but this measurement and this beta decay, central values are consistent. But the neutron lifetime measurement is error bar is twice, which means even if I remove this one, there is still anomaly. And then this one makes the anomaly bigger because central value is even, smaller. So actually, pull this circle to the left, so make this anomaly bigger. So even without neutron, there is anomaly. Sorry, I don't know if I answered your question.
I'm not sure either, but the width of the stripe is plus or minus one sigma? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, I think so. Sorry, this is not the plot I make. So I believe this is a one sigma, but I don't know that whether this is a two, I think two, one sigma in two-dimensional sense, which means like a 2.3, so delta chi squared 2.3 is the range. Yes,
here. You said the vertical red line is that super loud beta decays, right?
Yeah, exactly, yes.
So which of these things is the neutron decay? Is it the circle?
So I don't think this is including in this plot, so yes.
So which bit decay, can you repeat? I mean, which nucleus?
I'll come back to this point, yes, exactly.
Yeah, and also, I also want to understand so what Cliff has been asking. So ideally, the blue and orange stripe would be the same, right? Not the same, but should overlap, right? And the fact that that orange and the blue don't overlap, that's already worrisome, isn't it?
No, I don't think so, because this is like a less than one sigma discrepancy, right? If I take this orange and blue, because orange has so much uncertainty, this is not inconsistent, right?
Within two sigma, okay. Perhaps.
Within two sigma for sure,
okay.
Yeah. And even one sigma.
There's a joint fit to everything, right? So I take the various bands and I ask, what's a global fit to that whole thing?
Yeah, exactly. So you have a chi square of this green one, chi square of this orange one, chi square of this light blue one, chi square of the red one, and then maybe I can put the chi square of the neutron lifetime. Then I get whatever circle. And then ask a question whether this is along this unitarity line or not.
Yeah, but also it looks to me like the error bars of this blob are so small because of this tension, right? Because the error bars of each single measurement is much bigger in vertical direction, right? And now you get actually pretty neat circle, right, with small error bar, which I think comes from actually this
So you're talking about this error bar, right?
Yeah.
This error bar, I should consider maybe. It's a combination of these three measurements. So maybe this green one and blue one.
Which are a bit of tension, and that's what makes your error bar actually narrower, because you end up with some distribution in between.
I don't know whether it's actually narrower. It's simply if two measurements are really overlapping, I think the error bar can be smaller than this, right? But because central value is a little bit off, I think it's actually larger than what you would expect. But I didn't do this exercise. This is like just outcome of the measurement.
Also, can I ask another?
Yeah.
So here you're not showing the BBN. Do you look at the BBN lifetime measurement of the neutron?
BBN neutron lifetime. But I don't think it's as precise as this one. Is it as precise as this one or?
I don't know if it's as precise, but it's a bit lower on that side.
No, I'm not. I'm not including.
It's like 2% level. It's more like the.
Okay, so I have a number later, so I can look at the accuracy. So, but okay, to answer your question, I'm not including that. So the question is okay. We have a good discussion about the quark sector, but the question is how it's actually connected to neutrino sector. So basically, this is the takeaway of my talk. So this kind of like a the unitary like a CKM measurement, it's related to the CKM measurement. It's always involved with charge current, right? Because it, as we just saw that flavor changing process only happens in the charge current, right? And we usually want to have a like a charge current in the quark side, but the other side it want to be lepton, because this is whether experimentally clean and also theoretically clean. So usually you have a measurement of that this quark flavor changing process. You have a quark and a lepton in the other side, which means charge current in the lepton means that you have always a neutrino. So many proposal is actually like try to like a tweak the quark sector, but one naive thing you can think of is that, okay, this is maybe something related to neutrino because all the measurements are related to neutrinos. So this is basically the our message. And then this can be even true for the RD measurement because it's very similar situation. It's a charge current. So RD is also another flavor anomaly in the BDK. Okay, so basically I try to make this observed VUD or VUS is different from the true VUD and VUS by steroid neutrino. Yes.
So it's also possible that that the problem lies with upturn W form factor. W prime.
W prime. What is W prime?
Another W.
Ah, okay, which I don't include yet. W. Yeah, so if I have a W prime, there is another story, yes.
Well, why not?
Why not?
Why not have that?
Why not? I cannot. Should I include it or?
Nobody detects that you don't.
Well, what is the mass of the W prime?
The LHC has not seen a W prime.
Yeah, so then I don't have to include it, right?
But nor have we seen steroid neutrino.
Yeah, but I'm seeing the sign from that one.
Everything. You want to explain the SQ2 symmetry of the standard model.
No.
The speaker should choose what he's speaking about.
yeah, so I could include it, but I also could not, like don't have to, so I hope it's fine. But yeah. Yeah, so basically this is a takeaway, and let's do this exercise in the rest. So like I already explained, so we need a three combination. So to measure the unitarity, we have to have at least two measurements out of these three, VUD, VUS, or ratio, okay? So that three measurements are necessary. So let's start from the low energy. So neutrino energy really matters, so I plotted the measurement with respect to the emitted energy of the neutrino, or phase space. So starting from MeV to GeV, okay? So let's start from the low energy. So lowest one is a neutron decay. So neutron decay lifetime measure the VUD itself. And also nuclear beta decay, it's actually like a super loud beta decay, 0+ to 0+. Mostly like a 0+ is not a charge, it's like the angular momentum and the parity. And then decay into it's a beta plus decay most measurements. And this also measures the VUD, and this is the best measurement of the VUD so far. So the phase space of the neutrino for the neutrino is like a 0.7 MeV to 8 MeV. And then if you go to the MeV, like 100 MeV region, there are various important measurements related to VUS. So for example, pi on decay to mu nu, or k on decay to mu nu, k to pi l nu, and so on. So for example, this decay divided by this decay give you a good measurement of the VUS and VUD because the quark level is very similar to each other, but this contains a D and this contains S. Also, you can measure the VUS from the k on decay to pi l nu. And another important measurement related to this is a G Fermi measurement. This is simply muon decay. So muon decay is also like around 100 MeV. And then last category is a tau decay. So tau decay is around 1 GeV. So tau decay to k nu or pi nu. This measures these combinations. Okay, so the value I quoted, I don't know if it's the latest one, so, actually I didn't quote the BUB, so I have to check the BUB size later, but so currently there is this number. Anyway, so it's very close to 1 for the BUD, and 0.22-ish for the BUS, this is the BUS, and ratio is almost 0.23. Okay, so the goal to achieve is this. So experimental observation tells this plus this quantity should be less than 1. So to achieve this, simply I have to make this BUD observed should be smaller than 2 BUD or BUS observed smaller than BUS, 2 BUS. Assuming that the unitarity is actually preserved in the truth level, but experimentally it's screwed up. So that's a basic idea. So let's try to estimate several scenarios. So let's think about sterile neutrino is much, much heavier than 100 MeV. Okay, so this actually does not work. So this is what happens is this. So first important thing is actually G Fermi is modified. So G Fermi is modified because this is also pick up the mixing of the sterile neutrino here or here. So if there is any mixing with a mu neutrino, you pick up this theta mu square here. And if there is any mixing with a electron type neutrino, there is a mixing here. And there is a reduced coupling. So you have actually this reduced coupling appearing here. So you measure G Fermi only by this combination if it's heavy. So on the other hand, in the quark level, the meson decay, for example, or nuclear decay, you measure this G Fermi versus VUD and then reduced coupling. So because this is only electron type neutrino is involved, so you have a reduced coupling of the electron type neutrino. This is equal to like a G Fermi observed times GUD, BUD observed. And when you extract VUD observed, you have to divided by this G Fermi observed, which is this quantity. So it actually works opposite. So BUD observed becomes the BUD times 1 plus theta square. So for the other decay is also similar. It becomes 1 plus mixing angle square, which is completely opposite to this situation. So you actually want to reduce the observed BUD, but it's actually, if the sterile neutrino is heavy, it's actually the anomaly gets worse. So the reason is mainly because of G Fermi. We only measure the G Fermi by muon decay. By far the best measurement comes from the muon decay. As long as we use the measurement of the muon decay, G Fermi from the muon decay, the VUD observed is like this. Okay, so this is actually the situation doesn't work. So if it's heavier than 100 MeV because G Fermi is modified. So okay, let me take what happens? Yeah, so which is opposite? Actually, this direction actually works to explain the CDFW anomaly. So this is somebody's paper. So this paper after the W mass anomaly for the similar framework for the heavy sterile neutrino. So actually, the CDF W boson anomaly can be explained by this heavy sterile neutrino because they favor this region. But CKM anomaly, actually, it's completely opposite. You favor the unphysical region, which is like a negative theta mu square or negative theta e square. So this actually works for the W anomaly, but not for the Kabibongo anomaly. Yes?
So you're saying that the new CDF measurement of the mass of the W.
Yeah.
Which is so, 100 MeV.
So in this case, it's like a very, very heavy sterile neutrino, I think.
What happens with the Atlas measurement?
Ah, OK. So this is before the new Atlas measurement.
So the Atlas value of MW, what happens?
I think it's consistent with there is no anomaly, right? With Atlas and
so the sign, okay.
Yeah, so I think this the point of this paper is that they just studied a framework of this standard model EFT in the context of the right-handed neutrino, and then there is effectively like a reduced coupling parameter, like this one. In their case, they plotted even negative value, which is unphysical if you put in the real model. Then in the case of this CDM MW anomaly, it's kind of like just lucky because of the sign is right direction. So this is actually in the right physical region, like a theta square is positive, positive. But it's actually unphysical for the Khabib anomaly.
The CDF, the Atlas value is what's predicted by this time of
month. Sorry, can you say again? So Atlas, I don't think Atlas measurement of
the mass of the W is what's predicted by the standard model.
Yeah, I think we're all, I think
okay.
So maybe we can move on
okay.
Because we only have 10 minutes
left. Okay. Oh, okay, okay. That's not good. Okay, so let me take a completely different regime. Like, let's say the stellar neutrino is much, much lighter than neutrino experimental energy. In this case, also doesn't work because this is in all the measurement of this quark decay or heavy meson decay or nuclear decay, you don't tag the neutrino, right? So you don't know whether this is a stellar neutrino event or the active neutrino event, right? So you have to add two diagrams, but incoherently. So you have to have an active neutrino diagram square plus stellar neutrino diagram square. So this just comes back to the standard model because sine squared plus cosine squared should be equal to standard model up to some correction like this. So very light stellar neutrino also doesn't work. So too heavy it doesn't work and too light doesn't work. And then possible situation is like a kind of intermediate. For the heavy one, the main reason it doesn't work is actually because you messed up the G Fermi. So the idea is simply, if it's like a lighter than G Fermi but heavier than this, like a phase space energy, if the mass is around here, this can actually work. So that's basically the idea, and it's actually very particular, pointing the very particular mass. So basically, for these measurements, you see that the active neutrino see the reduced coupling, but for these measurements, the released energy is much, much higher than this neutrino mass. So basically, the measurement looks like a standard model. Then you can actually deviate the relation. Okay, so what is the beta decay and then like a neutron and so okay. So there are two main measurements of the BUD. So that's actually main important things because this is where the stellar neutrino appears. So neutron measurement is basically approximately V minus A current, and there is some uncertainty for the A part. And then released energy is roughly 0.7 MeV. So this is basically mass difference minus electron mass. And then the uncertainty of this measurement is like this 4 to the 9 times 10 to the minus 4. So it's a very, very small number. And currently, the experimental measurement is dominant. Experimental uncertainty is much more than theoretical uncertainty. And then, there is a tension among the lifetime measurements. So that's a caveat. On the other hand, the best measurement is come from the nucleus beta decay. So it's a super allowed nuclear beta decay. So 0 plus goes to 0 plus E nu. So this is a purely vector weak current. So it picks up BUD. So theoretically, it's better. And then the phase space is around 2 MeV to 8 MeV. And among many measurements, there is one particular good measurement. It's like a aluminum 26 to magnesium 26. In this particular transition is a 3.2 MeV is a phase space. And then the accuracy is better than neutron, but it's not way too better. So it's like a 3 times 10 to the minus 4 and this. So in this measurement, experimental uncertainty is actually smaller than systematic, which means like you have a theoretical uncertainty dominating here. So which is maybe you suspect, OK, it's many-body physics and so on. Indeed, like theoretical uncertainty do change over years, also like not decreasing, but increase sometimes. So, so because some people forget something, okay, which is not something I know very well, but this is like a, something you may want to take, put the, like put salt and gray for the uncertainties. But yeah, but it's actually competing each other. Okay, so if the, let's say 10 MeV stellar neutrino mixes with electron type neutrinos, VUD indeed modify in this way, and this can explain the anomaly like this, because BUS square is same as standard model, but the BUD observed is actually smaller than what you expect. So it's actually true level unitarity using this parameter is actually preserved, but the experimental observation can be smaller than one. So that's basically the idea. I already mentioned, but okay, so there is the showcase of various measurement of the super loud beta decay. So there is a survey paper. So these people write this review like every 2-3 years. And then there are many measurements. They report FT value. This is a kind of like a frequency times a lifetime. So frequency is basically tell you the mass difference between the parent particle and daughter particle. And then this FT is basically directly connected to the this GV. GV is connected to the VUD. And then if you look at this global fit, this is like a dark gray region, which is almost consistent with this one. This is because like this measurement is a lot better than other measurements. So this is actually really leading the sensitivity. Okay, so let me insert stellar neutrino a little bit more carefully. How much time do I have?
You started late, so you do have, say, until 2:10, which is like 15 more minutes.
Oh, 15, oh, that's more than enough. Okay.
Yes. Sorry, can I just ask you
that? Yeah.
So, but then what's the, so the anomaly is being led then by these measurements, I guess, the uncertainty.
So, yes, this measurement and, yes, so.
So, how do we expect to make them better? Can they? So, in other words, can this anomaly be confirmed, or is it ever going to be just treated by theoretical systematics and then it's kind of hopeless to...
Sorry, what do you mean by confirmed? Like
so, because, yeah, you have a tension,
yeah.
Right? Okay, tension is coming from the measurement of...
So let's say this and then a combination of this.
It's a combination, but yeah. I guess that's partially in tension, at least just looking at the plot.
Oh, this
yeah.
Measurement itself? Let's see. Like I think these measurements itself are not mutually inconsistent, like mutually consistent, right? So they are consistent each other because like error bars.
Yeah, okay. Towards the future. Say that you want to confirm this anomaly, reach 5 sigma or 10 sigma or whatever. How do you do it? Can they do it? Because if the theory systematics is a problem, then
I think neutron measurement is really important. So neutron measurement is still like a subject to the experimental uncertainty, not the theoretical uncertainty. So if they can improve that one as good as this one, it's only a factor of 2-3 away from this. So I think you can say something more about this. My scenario actually have a some differentiation between, but yeah, that's another direction. And also, if you can do the measurement among the VUS and VUD and so on. So that can something you can improve as well. But like this one is, as you said, it's hard because now theoretical uncertainty dominates. So it's difficult to shrink the error bar. Yeah.
What is that theoretical uncertainty in this case?
I think that there are many theoretical uncertainties. So like a many body physics, like a, yeah. So
potential, right?
You if I no, but these ones are chosen so that they you can use symmetry arguments to get the matrix element, right?
Right. So they have like a they have their like a raw measurement here, FT value, and they have to correct to this capital F and T value, and then they have like a every symbol means there is a calculation, like a, some correction to raw measurement to this. So that's actually like a also like a, for example, this is a how vector current is corrected.
Nuclear physics calculations or the particle physics calculations?
I think it's nuclear physics mostly. Yeah. Sorry, there is something from the Zoom.
Yes.
If I may comment, there is It's kind of a complicated situation because there's another input that you need for this, which is the axial vector coupling. And that one is folded into your theory uncertainty, and it's measured in beta decay asymmetry parameters. And there's a discrepancy between early measurements of GA and late measurements of GA. So kind of the latest updates on that is that people cherry pick the experiments that you want for the GA measurement.
So I think
it's
that's
a bit more complicated.
That's related to only neutron, because super loud is only vector.
Right.
If I understand correctly.
Yeah, that's right. But if you want to use the neutron lifetime
right.
for this, then there are two hurdles for that.
Yes.
The first is resolving the bottom measurements, sorry, the beam measurements. And the second is getting a better measurement of GA, more robust measurement.
Yeah, I agree. So yes, neutron measurement has a different uncertainty, theoretical uncertainty. But I think still like an experimental uncertainty is bigger, if I understand correctly.
And I don't know if you talk about this, but there are pion decay, pion beta decays that you can use for it. And I think you cannot get the same precision, but it's kind of a very orthogonal way of doing this measurement. So pi plus to pi zero decays.
Pi plus to pi zero decays. Yes, that's actually something people can do in the future, right? I think.
Pioneer, think it's
Pioneer,
called.
Yes. Yeah, maybe that's something else, like a pion decay. Yes. Sorry, I forgot that. Yes. Okay, so let me just elaborate how I implement this steric neutrino a bit carefully, because I have a mass range like a kind of intermediate, let's say like a 3 MeV or 2 MeV. This is like a partially appears, but not completely like a integrated out. So for example, like I have this standard model process with a active neutrino, and then steric neutrino with a mass of, let's say, 2, 3 MeV, but the phase space is like, let's say, 4 MeV. So I have to have some weight factor because of the phase space suppression. And then like we have, for each measurement, we have this different correction factor proportional to the theta square. So if the steric neutrino mass is much, much heavier, this F factor becomes 1. Basically, this becomes 1 minus theta square. And then if the mass is much, much lighter, this F factor vanishes. So this just come back to the standard model. And then like a different transition have a different curve. And the most important one is this aluminum 26 and the neutron. Okay. So the a little bit annoying thing was actually I was not 100% sure about matrix element. So this is basically phase space correction factor. And matrix element is whether I had to check whether matrix element is not affected or not, but looks like a matrix element is not affected by steric neutrino mass. So basically, the phase space correction is a main thing about the mass dependence. OK, so let me show the fit result. So first, this is a combination of the older kaon decay measurements and nuclear beta decay measurement and one particular neutron measurement, which is a Botto measurement. Auto-neutron measurement. So steric neutrino, so in this case, actually, anomaly is originally like a minus 2.8 sigma. And this is a mass of the steric neutrino. And then this y-axis is a mixing angle square. Sorry, I'm plotting the two different notations. So basically, the anomaly is explained by 10 to the minus 3 order. So as you can see, the logic, I hope, if it's heavy enough, especially heavy enough compared to the aluminum transition, physics doesn't change much. So until you hit you start changing like a muon decay or something. So like a heavier than this doesn't change much. But if you have mass lower than aluminum transition, so aluminum transition becomes standard model-like, so it becomes, the fit gets worse and worse. You have a slightly like a favored region because of the neutron. So this is actually kind of shape. This shape is more sharpened in the next slide. So currently, the nuclear beta decay is a dominating factor here. Okay, so let me take a different data set of the neutron. So if I take a beam neutron measurement, which is actually even more disfavored at CKM unitarity. So in this case, neutron data itself has a more preference to preference of the anomaly. So there is a small island here. So original significance is like a 3.8 sigma, and best fit is like there is a pool of 3.2 sigma. So the same similar physics, like if it's heavy enough, the physics won't change much. And if you go lower and lower than the aluminum transition energy, it gets worse and worse. But there is a small island because the beam measurement is more favored this anomaly. So and so on. Yeah.
What is the purple line?
Yeah, I'm going to explain. Yeah. So yeah, there are these are bounds. So this is actually a little bit, yeah. So there are two bounds. So this shaded one is something I cannot avoid. And then this purple one I can avoid in principle. So there is a potential bound here. So the blue one is a same kind of process. Look at beta decay and look for a kink. So this is actually a measurement in 90s or something. Nobody did it afterwards. And then there is several measurements. It looks like a handwritten plot, right? So there are two measurements. Like you take the fluoride 20 and then, I don't know, this like a 54 Cu. And so you don't take this Fermi 2 and Fermi 1. This is actually a kind of a fit bound. So it's actually coming from the super loud, but it's not actually direct kink search. So direct kink search is these two things. So this is actually bound from the nuclear beta decay kink search. So nobody did update towards this direction or this direction. Okay, so another severe bound is actually potentially come from pion decay to sterile neutrino. This is because like in the standard model, we don't usually care this process, like a pion decay to E nu, because it's so small. Matrix element is suppressed by neutrino mass or electron mass, right? But if it's sterile neutrino, especially if the sterile neutrino mass is heavier than electron mass, the matrix element is enhanced by mass of the sterile neutrino. So as you go to the right, the matrix element of this process gets bigger and bigger. So it's actually the sensitivity, even though experimental sensitivity won't change, but the theoretical prediction gets more and more. So you can potentially get a bound because of this enhancement. So this can be avoided by writing some, like, this is ugly part of this scenario, I should say. So I should write some kind of like I should introduce maybe some doublet of SU2 to make this kind of like contact interaction between the quark and lepton. But the difference from the SMEFT is that this is the right-handed neutrino. So this operator actually only affect the pion decay, but not nuclear beta decay or neutron decay. So by having this operator or some heavy scalar, this can be potentially removed, but it requires some cancellation between this operator and then the sterile contribution of this. But it's in principle.
How heavy is the scalar?
It's like a, with order one coupling, it's like a 40 TeV.
40 TeV. 40 TeV.
Yeah. So it's a subtle effect for both of them, but yeah. But it's a roughly 40 TeV. The interesting thing is that this looks like affect both pion decay and the nucleon decay, but actually it mainly affect the pion decay, but not nucleon decay. By looking at the dimensional analysis, like the operator dimension is different. So for the nucleons, it's actually this effect is not much significant. So it's actually it can relax this bound, but not affecting these things.
But you also assume some structure in those X's, right?
Yes, I have to assume this. So I'm not saying this is very beautiful. Yes, I have to assume. But even if I have a generic things, let's say like there is no particularly collider bound or EFT bound from the collider, so.
What about K-on mixing?
scale mixing, I don't think it matters here.
Why?
Because there is no CP violation of this new scaler, so I don't.
Why there is no CP violation? Principle, you can write
it. I can write it, yeah, but.
There is no symmetry protecting them. That's another.
That's probably true. Yes. So if I have a CP violation, I have to be worried about KK bar mixing, right? On top of this. That's true. K on decay. Okay, K on decay. I have to think. Maybe not, but I have to think more carefully.
Yeah,
yes, because it's.
It
yeah.
The XQIJ, if that thing has the structure of just a standard normal in
yeah. So.
Is that fine,
so for.
Because in that case, you wouldn't care about anything. Like about
oh yeah.
Because it will be like MFV and all the
right. So. So I think if I okay, I didn't calculate. We didn't calculate in the using the EFV, MFV, but I think that's better. So I think. So I don't know the answer to it, but I think that's better. But it's yeah, that's true. So if it's following the MFV structure, then of course it's an additional assumption, but it's saved from any. Most of the measurements. Sorry.
Even if you did that, would the neutron EDM be a problem?
I'm sorry?
Even if you did that, would the neutron EDM be a problem? Because there you've got the CP violation, but no flavor.
Okay, so I didn't consider any CP violation signature for this particular operator, yeah. So we just introduced this like to tweak this bound, but we didn't study this part much, honestly. Yeah. But actually, like there is another potential issue is a cosmology too, because maybe Matthias pointed out before seminar. So the issue is actually this is a typically long-lived region because MEB regions, like a sub-GB stellar neutrinos tend to be long-lived. So there are two possible bounds, one from like a non-standard cosmology. The other one is like looking for like some stellar neutrino decay in the lab. So for example, solar neutrino with some mixing produce a stellar neutrino. And then this stellar neutrino decay in the experiment on the Earth, E plus E minus signal. So both of them can be avoided if N decays, stellar neutrino decays to standard model neutrinos quickly. So this requires some non-standard cosmology, actually. so that basically, if I don't do anything, like there is a stellar neutrino couples to the standard model because this is very, very constrained parameter, right? I have to have a mixing to the standard model to the 10 to the minus 3 order. So this automatically determines that the decoupling temperature of the stellar neutrino to be around 20 MeV. And the lifetime is actually way longer. So this looks like a problematic because it messed up the old cosmology. And to avoid the previous bounds like cosmology and the Borek-Sino bound, I have to make this stellar neutrino decay to the standard model neutrino by some having another scalar, like let's say mediator, to stellar neutrino to three neutrino quickly before this neutrino decoupling happens. So this actually requires 100 MeV, some kind of mediator, and so on. So if this is a case, like a cosmology is fine, but you know this is not generic scenario from the anomaly. So basically that takeaway is there is a way to explain this Kabibo anomaly by stellar neutrino, but we need a lot of like fixing these scenarios. But it's potentially related to the stellar neutrino sector, even the anomaly is the quark sector. And then good scenario for me is actually the. This anomaly actually only remains in the neutron decay. So if it's neutron decay, the scenario is much, much simpler. And let's say there is no anomaly in the nuclear beta decay, but there is only anomaly in the nuclear neutron beta decay. So that will be a situation I prefer, but let's see in the future measurements. Okay, so these shape analysis in the nuclear beta decay can be potentially interesting. And also like a neutrino-less double beta decay can be also relevant, but again, it's not robust prediction about this one. Okay.
Let's but the neutrinos double beta decay sounds like it was a good one because you've got a mass which is in the sweet spot.
Yeah.
So why is that not robust?
Why?
You say it's not robust. Why is it not robust?
So the issue is like, okay, how many stellar neutrinos I can introduce? Like if I limit number of stellar neutrinos, like right-handed neutrinos, I think I can do. I have a robust predictions. Maybe it's already dead, but I don't think if I have like let's say four or five right-handed neutrinos to have a neutrino spectrum. I don't know whether this is actually give a robust prediction.
I remember looking into back in the 90s with Mohab Patra looking into this, and what happens with neutrinos with double beta decay is that you're more and more sensitive to it as the mass goes up until you get about 100 MeV, 10 MeV, and then it goes down again. But
go down.
The scales of the nucleus are kind of in that 10 MeV range. That's where you're most sensitive to it. So
I see.
Dangerous place.
Okay. So maybe I should look at more carefully. Yeah. But sorry.
I think the story goes that if you have the scenario we introduced in the beginning of the talk with these partners, then you're excluded by double beta decay. But if you have symmetry-protected seesaws, like inverse seesaw, extended seesaw, where lepton number conservation is what gives you small neutrino masses, then because lepton number is quasi-conserved, then neutrinoless double beta decay is not an issue. But that's a qualitatively different seesaw.
Hmm.
Right.
I see.
Yeah. And then there is another thing I wanted to say. The BEAST experiment by our colleagues in Triumph has new bounds in this region that you discussed. So
what
you said there were only experiments in the 90s doing beta decay kink searches, or there's actually a recent limit in that region.
So like there is a bound on top of this?
Yes, it's exactly on top of your purple region.
So
and that's a beryllium 7, I believe.
Do you know the mass range roughly?
100 kV to 1 MeV.
Ah, so it's very low mass.
Yeah.
100 kV to. So I see. From here to. I see. So it's not covering this region, but yes. That's something, yeah.
So your scenario requires some fine-tuning for the pion decay not to be an issue, and then you require the steriles to be in a symmetry-protected seesaw, and then the steriles also have to decay into invisible particles, otherwise you run into trouble with cosmology and the lab experiments looking for decaying flight decays, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
You can do it. Detect steron neutrinos through mixing, neutrino mixing.
Okay.
That is, the steron neutrinos supposed to oscillate into the three neutrinos. So recently there's been three experiments published which reject steron neutrinos. The first is the microboon experiment.
Mm-hmm.
The other is the French, which is the most accurate. And the third is the Prospect.
Okay.
Now the Grenoble experiment explains the anomaly that's been around for a long time as to why in reactors when they produce antineutrinos, there's an excess. It's called the excess neutrino anomaly. You see too many electrons and photons. And this experiment excludes the possibility of steron neutrino through resolving this neutrino anomaly, reactor anomaly. Mm-hmm. In terms of the reactor anomaly, is due to systematic errors in the calculations. So that's something that should be taken into account here.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
These are different, so I don't know.
Yeah, I thought it's also different.
Different mass scales.
Yeah, it's different.
But,
Yeah, it's actually very heavy for the standard neutrino physics. So
yeah,
it's like MeV is pretty heavy for.
So what tuning do you have in the neutrino mass? How much tuning is there?
So there are several.
No mass.
So it's like a, so like a, Matthias, I'm not so much familiar with inverse CISO, but if I take like a standard type one CISO, like a naively, like if I only have one this stellar neutrino, right? So then let me see. So maybe it's easier to look at RES side. Oops. So for example, if I don't do anything, if I do the type 1 CISO, I have like this mass times mixing angle is that neutrino mass.
Okay.
So this is only one stellar run right and neutrino case. So this is like a theta. The good thing about this thing is like because I'm motivated by only anomaly and this size is known. Theta is fixed. So 10 to the minus 3.
How heavy does the mass have to be?
This?
CISO.
Yeah, this I just said, like, it's MeV, right? Because if it's too heavy, it doesn't work. Yeah. So that's actually like a.
Maybe GeV.
So it cannot be GeV, like I explained. So because if it's GeV, it doesn't work. So it's like a, should be a specific mass range. Because if it's too light, it doesn't work. If it's too heavy, it doesn't work. So there is a specific mass range, like a 10 MeV or 1 MeV, and then mixing angle, which is way too heavy compared to the. Like a, you know, then like I have to have another generation of the right-hand neutrino to make this combination smaller and so on. So this is one thing, and then neutrino less double beta decay give us constraint in another mass combination. Yeah, and then the neutrino physics gives us not the combination in the mass, so it's a combination of the flavor and the mass. So. And also maybe there is a bound from the Katrin, it's like a beta decay, right? So that's another mass combination. So I usually think this is like a, it's not impossible to find a parameter space, but usually it's not necessarily natural to, so for example.
This is what I'm asking, by how much? I mean, is it like
percentage?
Yes.
If it's inverse CISO, maybe it's this relation.
So the idea that everybody plays is there on neutrino physics, which I just recently learned from Matthias, is that the inverse CISO, everything.
What is inverse CISO?
Inverse CISO, it's a model. It's essentially, so the way that Matthias explained to me, I didn't understand.
He can talk. He is.
But then I understood it's just like, it's essentially the equivalent of Nelson Barr in the metal sector.
Oh.
So it's mixing of some electrons or so it's.
I don't understand
it,
what.
So what is
so relation is not.
It's natural. If it does not fall, but you still get to have large mixing of the stellar neutrino.
Okay. Matthias,
go ahead.
Yeah, I can explain in a different way. So. Inverse CISO just means that you have pairs of heavy neutrinos, and the CISO contribution to neutrino masses always goes like the contribution of one heavy neutrino minus the contribution of its partner. That's always ensured by the lepton number assignment of your particle content, and you can show that neutrino masses vanish exactly when lepton number is conserved because the contribution of one CISO partner cancels exactly the contribution of its partner.
I see.
It may sound like fine-tuning, but it's actually controlled by lepton number conservation.
Hmm.
So what happens is both neutrino mass double beta decay as well as neutrino masses are controlled by the lepton breaking. And that lepton number breaking parameter can be very, very small. But it doesn't change the fact that your mixing of the light neutrinos with the heavy partners can be large.
I see.
This is a symmetry protected CISO. It I wouldn't call it fine tuning. It's like a symmetry argument, but it is a qualitatively different CISO mechanism.
Yeah.
But I think it's okay to avoid the neutrinoless double beta decay bounds as long as you have kind of that framework in mind. And yeah. What that means is essentially your heavy neutrinos are Dirac particles for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
So okay,
thank you. That's useful.
Yeah, I think it's like if this is a case, like the only remaining tweak I have to deal with is like, okay, depends on the parameter space, but so for example, if I point out this region, I still have to play with this, like this bound with this.
Yeah, I am a lot more concerned about the pi and decay bounds than anything else. I think those are the hardest ones to avoid.
So then like, okay, so I should say it's not maybe the best scenario for this particular situation, but if let's say, neutron decay lifetime measurement favors this region, but let's say nuclear beta decay come back to the unitarity, then actually it can be more interesting for this scenario because it favors low mass region, which is maybe okay with a pion decay bound. So in that situation, it can be interesting, but the situation is not yet there. So in this case, I still have to.
One last thing I will say is your large electron mixing will also change the gallium experiments. And there is such a thing at the moment as the gallium anomaly, which is just radioactive sources in counting experiments where you see way less electron neutrinos than you expect.
Gallium experiment.
But I think that actually prefers larger mixing angles than what you have here, but something to look at.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know this one. Thank you. Okay, so basically that's it. Thank you. That was nice. Actual Zoom interaction. Yeah. Very useful.
Sorry I can't be there in person.
No. Yeah. It was very useful. Thank you.
So Mateus, how many sterile neutrinos we need in this is it six?
If you want three masses, you need six states. Yes.
Making the Dirac sounds like something.
Yeah. You have basically, I think, Tev said it very well. There's a conserved quantum number, which is lepton numbers. Mm. And everything else comes by small break.
And apparently, for some reason, the Leon analogies that I went to a conference where I asked the same question, like, there's two in the mass, and somebody from the audience yells, Heber Cecil. And apparently, it's like, super well known in the neutrino community that they are all assuming inverse Cecil, but we don't know.
We don't know. I mean, it's the neutrino community.
So I'm not yet neutrino community because I don't know very well. So. I see.
Mateo is not yelling at you. It was somebody else that yells like from the background, inverse Cecil, and I was like, okay, there's a model.
Why is it called inverse?
Yeah, it's a stupid name. I prefer something like symmetry protected seesaw or something like that.
Symmetry protected seesaw actually makes sense because inverse takes you to the inverse neutrino mass hierarchy.
Yes.
And it goes to different
stuff. We should call it pseudo-Dirac seesaw.
Yeah, pseudo-Dirac. Pseudo-Dirac makes more sense. I mean, there is stuff.
Pseudo-Dirac is better, yeah.
Yeah.
Ready.
I agree. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.